get ready. The Digital Dog Pound presents Binary Revolution Radio. Now launch the bits.
Digital stance, getting firewalled ho, cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused a fight between Un and Jay-Z. The CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ, leave you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zip-sips. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
The curse of the Chicago Cubs lives on. 2003. They're out of the World Series. No, this is not a sports show. This is actually Binary Revolution Radio, episode 16. I am Stank Dog, and I am thoroughly upset. Actually, I'm not. That was a very good baseball series. My Cubs took it 7 games against the Marlins. I shouted out to them on the show and be the butt of everyone's joke, being kind of silly, but I guess we're done with that now. I have to have some new shouts tonight. But my partner in crime tonight is from a city that knows about winning. That would be New York, New York. Actually, not from New York, New York, but in theory you are in the house and in the state. I guess you...
Not theory in the house, and I'm here in New York, and I'm dealing with Yankees fans every day.
Don't you love it?
I can't deal with it anymore. I just want it to be over with, but whatever. And let me just preface this show and say this is not the show you can play for your mother, because my week has been fucked up, and I'm going to curse like crazy if I feel like it.
Well, you know, we do that on the show on occasion, so...
Just to let everybody know,
yeah, don't,
at point, we
don't,
didn't curse, and
exactly.
Now we're going to curse like crazy.
We need to put like a PG, rated R warning logo or something on the show notes.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll steal a logo from somebody. Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. That's copyright violation. I wouldn't do that.
That's true.
Don't sue me. Well, we have got a lot of show again this week. So I think the best course of action... I want you to talk about why you're pissed off. Of course, we will get to that. But let's start with some other housekeeping. Got a couple emails that I wanted to talk about. And... the first one actually kind of got me, it made me listen to someone else's view about what they think of school. I know a lot of kids sometimes in the forums will say how much they hate going to school, how they get frustrated with it and stuff like that, but Sub-Zero sent me an email explaining some detail of what annoys him and what gets him feeling kind of upset and angry about high school, and kind of made a little bit more sense to me. I could relate to it a little bit better, but I wanted to talk about it actually with you on the air so we could kind of see what you think about this. He sent me a very long article he had written in the past, actually, well-written article, and I'm just going to kind of summarize a couple of the points here so we can address them. The long and short of it was that money is the corruption of the education system, that money kind of screws things up, that they're underfunded, that the kids don't get what they need, that the students don't get what they need, and things like that. And not only school, but money screws things up in general, in life. You know, it's not just school, but in life there are the haves and there are the have-nots. And if you are the haves and you can go to a private school and stuff like that, that's great, but the majority of us can't afford that. So, that is absolutely a true statement. I mean, if somebody who has money can afford to buy themselves a laptop or a computer or something like that to help with their schoolwork, they'll have a car that they can drive to school, mommy and daddy buy them a new Porsche or whatever their hot car is nowadays. What is it, the Viper now?
Yeah.
And, can drive themselves to and from school. That saves you an hour of riding the big yellow banana to school. And the simple fact that, I don't know about you, but when I was in high school, I was working my ass off. I was washing dishes and stocking shelves and all that kind of stuff to pay bills, you know. So, you know, money means you don't have the luxury of not, you know, you have the luxury of not having to work, which is a huge benefit. So the thing is, though, that I understand all this and I completely relate to it, and they're absolutely valid points. But this was the case when I was in high school, 2 decades ago. God, I'm old. This was the case then, and it's still the case now. Nothing has changed. I mean, that's not new. That's nothing that's any different or worse about the school system now. People say, rant about how bad the school system is for this, this, and this. Well, we had that back then. And you get through it. It's not something that's going to change. It's not something that's going to change overnight anyway. It's not something that's going to change from one person. It is the system. It has become this bad, or in this shape, over a course of many, many years. So you have to realize that it's gotten to this point, and instead of complaining about it, or instead of hating school and cutting school and trying to avoid school and all that kind of stuff and hating every minute of it. Just make the best of what it is. You cannot do anything about it as a single person except live with it and get through it. And that's really what I've kind of said in the forums once or twice before. And I know Sub-Zero is not, you know, he understands that. But I wanted to bring it up on the radio to other people who I know feel kind of angry or upset about school. People I know that drop out of school thinking they don't need it or they don't care. It is what it is, and you're going to have to get through it one way or the other if you want a high school diploma. And you do want a high school diploma, do you not?
Definitely. You definitely want a high school diploma. And you probably almost definitely want, well, I can't say definitely, but at least for me, I definitely want a degree. So, you know, I went through my 4 years and dealt with that. And even though I have a bachelor's degree in computer science, I still think I need a master's degree to get a good job. So don't think school ends right after high school. Don't think the high school diploma is the be-all, end-all of it.
No, and actually, I think most of the people that I talk to about this don't think that high school is the end-all. They actually look forward to college, at least somewhat, quite a few of them. They look forward to college, and then some of them end up being disappointed at what they find at college, too. And it's going to be the same situation at college. I won't lie to you. Colleges are... There's a lot that is different about college, but there is a lot that is the same. I worked through college, too. I spent a lot of time working and very little time studying. Frankly, I didn't need to. I just show up to class, take the test, get my grade, you know, go on about my day. But, you know, it's not only that everything is money, but everything is a number in general. It's something Sub-Zero pointed out, too. It's all about the GPA. He said himself, and I've said on the show many times, that I've met people in the real world that have 4.0 GPAs. I've gone to class with other students, fellow students, that have 4.0 GPAs, and they couldn't find their ass with both hands. I mean, these people are just dumber than a box of hammers.
Yep.
It does. It just, you know, that just because they have the 4.0 doesn't mean anything. If they have the luxury of not having to work after school or before school, before college, or they, you know, they have the luxury of time and money that they don't have to stress and worry about bills and things like that, they can go home and spend 6 hours studying something to get a 4.0, or 6 hours doing homework and doing group assignments and perfecting every little bit of it. Well, I'll come home in 15 minutes and write the same paper, and I'll get my C or whatever and B and move on and pass the class.
Yeah.
I still intake and learn more about it than that person who spent 6 or 8 hours writing the same thing.
Right, because I've seen people who, you know, they have really good grades and whatever. They have, like I said, they have lots of money. They have no concerns other than school. When everything's handed to you like that, I don't think you really appreciate and learn what you learn out of school when you have to struggle a little bit. You know, I know a lot of people, they just kind of read through the books and they take the tests and then it just leaves their mind. That's it. They know, okay, the test is over. I don't need to know this anymore. And that's kind of the attitude that you shouldn't have. But a lot of people who have money, from what I've seen personally, that's the attitude they have. You know, life is handed to me. School is just something I have to get through, and that's it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not a very good memorized person. I don't memorize things very well. And I went to class with people who would, you know, I can remember a specific example in the networking class. Basic intro to networking, some years ago, a friend of mine who sat down, you know, the night before the test and memorized the entire chart of every different cable type and its maximum bandwidth and different, bit rates on off and stuff like that, and memorized it, go in and take the test, and then 24 hours later had forgotten it all or wiped it out. He just put it in short-term memory, regurgitated. Now, I went in there, and I got an A on the test as well, because it kind of came naturally to me, but I also retained it when it was all said and done. So, again, some of this is the same as high school. It's not really much different. But here's the part that I want you to understand. It is different about college. The GPA, you might find this hard to believe, but the GPA is not an end-all and be-all number. It is not the most important thing in college. It really is not. The GPA has minimum requirements for you to stay in school, and that's basically a C average. And actually, you can get less than that if you work the system. You get a couple, some grace periods and stuff like that. Trust me on this one. when it's all said and done, your goal in going to college is a piece of paper with the word degree on it. Now, whatever type of degree that is, You know, that's up to you, whatever your choice of study is, whether you want computer science, computer information systems, business administration, electrical engineering, or even, you know, I don't know, basket weaving. Even if you take a degree in foreign language or history, it doesn't matter. When it's all said and done, when you walk out of that college, you have in your hand a bachelor's degree in whatever. The same as that person who had the 4.0. He got the same degree that you got. And when you go to get a job, they don't ask you. Almost never have I been asked, what was your GPA? They don't care. They want to see that degree. And if you've got that degree, that gets you the interview. The interview or the on-the-job training, or you show up and they give you a shot at the job, that's when you prove your worth.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you don't have a 4.0, don't stress about it. When I started college, I did, and then I realized, you know what? This is crazy. I'm driving myself crazy. I'm not sleeping. I'm not getting, you know, I'm working all week hours of the morning and not getting home. I finally realized it's not worth all that. When it all is said and done, I got my degree. I have a good job. The people that I went to school with making 4.0s are not doing anything right now. Some of them probably are, but majority of them, they're no better off than I am. If anything, they're worse off because when they left, they didn't take in the knowledge, and that's the most important thing. Yes, you may think numbers are important and money's important, but don't let that distract you from getting the education. You get what you want, and what you want is knowledge and education. Everything else is secondary. Everything else is irrelevant.
Yep, and the people who get the 4.0s, you know, you say that, you know, maybe they didn't ask you about it on your interviews. I've had on my very first job, people ask me about my GPA, and maybe it does open doors on your first job, but when you go into a job, you got a 4.0 GPA, and everybody thinks that you're hot shit, and then you don't know anything.
And you don't know jack shit.
You don't know anything, and then you get fired. And the person who got, you know, a 3 or whatever GPA they got, they go in there, maybe they don't get that opportunity to get, like, the, you know, $200,000 a year job right off the bat, but their employer sees that they know something, and they keep them working there. Whereas these other assholes are just out on the street, and it's too bad for them. I've seen that happen a lot, and people don't believe it, but once you get out into the workforce, you'll see.
Oh, believe it. Believe it. And the other funny thing, it's a phenomenon I've noticed in my generation, actually, is that a lot of people do, like you said, they come out of college, they have the degree, they have, you know, the just a good situation coming out. People see the 4.0 or whatever, if that becomes a factor. They get a high-paying job. They immediately can't perform, so they're not there very long. They might get lucky and get a second or third job, another chance somewhere else, and they never stick. And the ironic thing is their solution is to go back to school and then go for, like, a master's or a doctoral degree, thinking that's the solution. Now, the solution is you should learn what you're in school to learn. And then they come out of college with a master's degree or a doctor's degree, and then they can't take lower jobs because they're, quote, beneath them. Oh, I've got a master's degree. I can't be, you know, blah, blah. Well, guess what? You're still dumber than a box of rocks. It hasn't changed. So then you got a bunch of people out there that have master's degree and doctor's degree and can't find a job. And I listen to people that I work with all day shaking and trembling in fear about, oh, the job market's so horrible. I know somebody. I know this person has a master's degree and they can't find work. And I know that. Well, guess what? My first question to you is, are they a dumbass?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's plenty of work out there. You know, there is plenty of work out there for people who are good and know what they're doing. There will always be a job in this country for you. Anyway, I don't want to go too far. That almost bordered on becoming a political thing, and we're going to pull back from that.
Fair enough.
But the message is, yes, while you're in the middle of it, when you're in high school, when you're in college, you may think that you're getting the short end of the stick. And frankly, I'll give you a little leeway and say you might be. The system is corrupt, and it makes it more difficult for you. But rise to the occasion. Rise to the challenge, and you will be a better person because of it. You will be a better employee, you will be a more knowledgeable human being, and you will be an asset to the planet Earth, which the majority of people are not. The majority of people on this Earth are destined to be fertilizer.
Yep.
But anyway, that was a good email. I'm glad, Sub-Zero, thank you for sending that, because, you know, we hear that from people a lot that are frustrated with the system, and I'm frustrated with the system. Lots of different systems frustrate me, but it's making the best out of what you have and doing what you can and accepting what you cannot. So, That's the advice portion of the show. We'll get that over with. I have actually have a pretty good technical email, or at least someone prompted me to do some technical research with an email. I got an email from Corwin. He just sent me an email with some information about Nopix STD, which we're very familiar with here. We've talked about on the show before. We've talked about an RFA before. I know Bland is a Nopix whore, and I'm sure he's used Nopix STD as well. So it's something we've used and we know about. However, he included some information, some news about the upcoming version that I had not heard yet. Currently, it's on 0.1B, and it has been since I've watched it, so it hasn't changed in a while. But apparently, there is a version 0.1, sans the B, that's going to be coming out soon. And one of the big changes that sounds promising is that instead of using KDE as the window manager, it's going to start using Fluxbox as the default window manager, I should say. The default was KDE, and now it's going to be Fluxbox. So that is very cool. I know a lot of people don't like the latest versions of KDE too much. But really, this is a bootable distro. I mean, you're not going to spend a lot of time in it. This is not your regular desktop. Is it really that big of a deal? I mean, you know, KDE has its problems, but ideally, you're only going to be using it for limited periods of time. Is that the most important thing? You know, is that a big announcement or a big update to the whole thing?
I don't really think so, because honestly, whenever I use Nopix on the couple machines that it actually works on, because for some weird reason it doesn't work on one of my laptops, but whatever, we'll skip that. Mm-hmm. Whenever I use Nopix, I use it in text mode, because the user interface does nothing but get in the way. I use it to fix machines, and I don't use it as a real, you know, usable distro all the time. So I don't think the window manager makes much of a difference.
Yeah, and not, at least not in that particular situation. I think I accidentally hit the button on the phone, so if anybody thinks the phone was tapped on that, if you heard a beep, that was me accidentally hitting the phone. The thing about this email, the research I said, it's spawned me to go out and do some looking about some other distros that I've been meaning to do anyway. I went out and did some searching to see if there's anything else along the same lines of Nopix STD, because we actually, some of us have been talking about them. Wasn't going to really announce this yet, and I'm not announcing anything now, but one of the ideas that we had kicked around, one of the DDP projects that we talked about in the members only forum, was possibly doing a DDP Linux distro, and it was going to be, and may, and still, if we go through with it, be a security tools distribution, a similar thing. So I went out there and did some research to look and see if there are others out there. And there's a lot more than I thought. A couple of these I had heard of, but a couple of them I had not heard of. So I thought I'd share some of these with the audience. And if anybody out there has any knowledge about these, by all means, send us an email, letters@benrev.com. Let me know what you think of them. The first one, which I had never heard of before, was called Penguin Sleuth. And it is a bootable Linux. And the word they used instead of security was forensics. It's a forensics distribution, so that one struck me as very interesting. Again, I don't know a whole lot about it, but it seemed very interesting. There was another one called FIRE, which stands for Forensic and Incident Response Environment. Say that 10 times fast. Which is, again, the same thing. It mentioned the word forensics along with security. Another one, PLAC, P-L-A-C, which I had heard of. That's on SourceForge, actually. Which is a bootable security distro, but it comes on one of the smaller business card CDs. So I really don't know. I mean, I guess that's handy to be smaller. Is there some other advantage to that that I'm missing?
Not that I can think of. You can fit it in your wallet.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you'd kind of mess it up if you sat on it wrong, I guess. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I guess you can put it in your shirt pocket, maybe carry it around more easily. Yeah, I guess that's. But you can't fit as much on it, so there's drawbacks as well. But yeah, that has it's obviously a customized, dedicated for certain circumstances, I guess. So that one could be interesting. There's also another one called I assume this is pronounced Trinix, T-R-I-N-U-X. It might be Trinix. But this is another one that was on SourceForge, and I didn't know this one was actually still live. I thought this one might have been abandoned or something, but it seems to be still alive or brought back to life, I should say. But again, it looked similar to the others, if anything, it might have been a little behind. I'm sure there's some people out there that are going to email me and tell me how great it is and that I'm putting it down, but I'm not. I don't. I'm come right out right now and say I have not tried any of them personally. I will hopefully do this soon when I can find the time, and we all know how difficult that is. But and especially if anybody has some experience with any. Have you had any experience with any of these?
No, I got a copy of, what is it, Linux, BBC, Bootable Business Card, but I've never really played it. But I've never had a need to. You know, I have Nopix, and that's it.
Yeah, see, same with me. I have, you know, if it's a desktop install, I install one of the standard distros. Right now I have Red Hat 9 on one box, and the other box I'm in the process of redoing, but I was leaning towards putting Debian, I don't know. And I just use plain old everyday Nopix on other stuff. So, we'll see. I'm very open to try some of these. If anybody wants to write a review or has some experience, like I said, send us an email, letters@binrev.com. We'll, you know, maybe we'll read it on the air or talk about it, research it, whatever. And that's pretty much it for the mailbag. And actually, both of these might have been, these were probably before last show. I did not check the email, so this might be a week old information from the email, so I apologize if it took so long to get back to you, but thank you both for writing in. And anybody who writes in, I do look at every email that comes in eventually, so please let me know if there's anything, any information you'd like me to add to those products. Now, again, I mentioned the time, and most of my time, once again for the past week, was updating the website. Websites, plural. And this time, since binrev.com is up and stable for the most part, now everything on binrev is cosmetic changes. But even that, I've gotten pretty close to what I want. I like to change the colors in the forum, but I'm so slow at that. I'm so terrible at graphics that I'd rather stick with the more technical stuff, the admin-related stuff. So I went on and finally moved StankDog and canceled that from the other host. And now that I'm gone from them, I can say what a bunch of fucking hard-ass pricks they were and what ignorant asses. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. I was getting errors in the forums. You remember all that? You used to have that forums down all the time.
All the time, SQL stuff going on. What was the name of that host, by the way?
They were called Liquid Web.
And they
Liquid suck. Web, and they suck dog ass. They really suck. Yep. Now, we warned you this is not the episode to play for your grandmother or anything. But yes, Liquid Web, I personally was not happy with Liquid Web, and I have a right to state that opinion, so don't sue me. Fuck you, though. Boy, we're degrading quickly, but oh well.
It's going to get so much worse in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I know, so we might as well lead up to it. Anyway, stankdog.com, the last site was, I liked it, it looked nice and everything, but anytime I wanted to add something or make a change, it was all writing everything from scratch, from the ground up, just took just an insane amount of time. Yes, it was original, yes, it looked nicer and everything, but frankly, I just don't have the time. I want to start moving on to projects and other things that we're working on. We barely squeak by publishing the magazine and doing the radio show every week. There's just not enough hours in the day. You know, money is not my problem. I can pay my bills. Time is my problem. I don't have enough time to do everything I want, which is make more money. But forget about that. It's an inevitable circle.
Personally, I hate maintaining web pages and a content management system like this, like Geeklog or something like that. It's definitely something that I need. I can't deal with doing manual web page updates. They're just the worst.
Yeah, well, you know, if I was trying to, you know, impress people with my elite web hacksawing skills or something like that, if I was trying to win a reward or show off or something, then, you know, I would do that. I'd do some kind of flash this. But listen, the reality is I don't have the skill, the artistic skill that goes along with it. I could write all the greatest code in the world, but it would be ugly as hell. So, and instead of spending all that time doing that, and it would take me literally 10 times as long to do the graphics, and they would not look as good after that 10 times as long, you know, I went ahead with Geeklog, which is a content management system. I used several. I tried several on stankdog.com. I never announced them or made them public. I was testing them myself, and I didn't like any of them. I tried PHP Nuke. I tried Post Nuke, which is two arms on the same body. I don't know how to describe it. Slash, several that I looked through, and I didn't like any of them. I mean, I guess they could all be customize and tweak to make them look how you want, but that defeats the point of a content management system to me. So I thought they sucked. PHP Nuke I thought really sucked.
Yeah, PHP Nuke I've used before, and it just, there was always problems with it. It's always really heavy on database access for no reason at all, and I can't use it.
Yeah, and I had been warned and heard that it was very inefficient, that it did a lot of not intelligent, not smart database access and stuff like that. And frankly, that was not my concern. I was warned about it, but since I'm on my own host now, I am my own host now, I'm on my own box and everything, I didn't care. So it put a load on the box. There's only a couple things on the box right now anyway. So I had the bandwidth and I had the CPU to spare to do that. So that wasn't my number one concern. What more pissed me off was just how over-engineered, yet at the same time incredibly unorganized it was. It was so messy, and there was just no documentation.
Mm-hmm.
It would have taken me as much time to use PHP Nuke as a content management system as it would have been for me to go back and write the thing from scratch, from the ground up, all over again, which is what I was trying to avoid in the first place. If I'm going to spend that much time in it, that takes away from the purpose. So I'm giving Geeklog my thumbs up. I'm giving that my seal of approval. If you guys, the site's not going to be the most beautiful thing in the world. There are skins that you can do, and I've played with some of those. I've tweaked it and customized it a little bit. But for the most part, I'm not going to really stray too far from how it ships. Functionality-wise, I'm giving it big thumbs up. And if anybody wants a quick, easy tool for their website, I highly recommend it. I would definitely say to try that first. I mean, form your own opinion. You can try any of them. But my recommendation, I was very impressed with Geeklog, and I looked at about 6, 7, 8 different packages, and that was the best. Now, PHP Nuke, I will give it this. It is the biggest community. It's the most widely used. There's a lot of secondary support. I don't know if that's a term. Aftermarket support. I don't want aftermarket support. I want a manual. I want a site. I want something that I can go and say, okay, I'm getting this error. Tell me why it's doing this and how to fix it. You know, common stuff like that. And I just couldn't find it with this. I just couldn't find it. They probably can't manage their own content management system, but I won't go there.
Yeah,
well, I guess I did just go there, so fuck it.
Terrible. I don't know. My recommendation, I haven't used Geeklog, personally. I've seen it before. And you know what? You say it's not the prettiest thing in the world. It looks fine to me. I'm not really concerned about the presentation. But what I'm using right now on my site, which I haven't maintained in so long, is Zope. And an add-on for Zope called Plone. And personally, I think those are the best for me. It's its own web server. It's got all types of, revision control system. If you update a page and then you realize, I want to change it back to what it was, you can just go back and undo your changes. And it's pretty nice. You can back up your whole website with one click. It's pretty brain dead if you want to do some really simple stuff. And if you want to get really into it, you can add, you can make your own Python or Perl modules for it. Do some really fancy stuff. So.
Well, now we should warn or at least preface this for the listeners that is a whole standalone package, server and everything together.
Oh yeah.
And the things that I'm talking about run under Apache.
Yeah, you can get it to run under Apache somehow, but honestly, it takes a little bit of work to get it installed and up and running. But then once you've got it running, it's pretty smooth from there on out.
Well. So, the moral of the story, try some things out, check, see what you like and how much time you want to spend. And for me, Geeklog was the best ratio of spending the right amount of time and give me the right amount of results and what I need. And PHP Nuke had a lot more features, if you could ever figure them out. It had built-in forums. It had built-in gallery support. Well, I don't need that. So, it's the right tool for the job also played a factor. But regardless, I wasn't going to use PHP Nuke because they suck. Anyway, I actually had some fun. I did a little bit of hacking, I guess you call it, with Geeklog. Well, actually, with all of these content management systems, another bonus, another thing about them is being open source. Everything I looked at, of course, is open source. I'm not looking at any commercial packages or anything. Screw that. These are all good open source. Don't get me wrong. But most of them are written very modular. You can get modules or add-ons that you could plug in. I hate saying that, using that term, but there's code that you can integrate into the canned package to add different modules. For example, I added on a module for, what did they add on? The weather module, which is what I was going to say. That's what I was hacking today. There's a module that you can plug in that will show the weather in your local area. So you can create an account on stankdog.com and customize what skin you want to use. Even though I've set a default skin, I also installed 6 or 7 of them just to have some, you know, people can choose what they like and have a little bit of difference. But I also added modules, and you can customize it and say, always show me the weather for my area. My goal is to use stankdog.com as my default homepage. And I want to be able to look at what the weather is. I want to be able to see, like, some silly news headlines. I want to be able to see my personal stories, you know, and find files that I'm looking for easily, you know, which is kind of the goal of what I want for that page. Now all the Binary Revolution stuff is separated, so this is more of a me thing. So I'm adding some modules there that I think are handy for me and I think would be handy for others. Unfortunately, one of the modules is, like I said, it's a weather module that will show you the weather in your local area. Well, this thing has, I think it was 5,000 and some weather locations, official locations from the National Weather Service. Unfortunately, my area was not one of them. I don't know how in the world you can have 5,000 and miss me down here, but I'm near a very large city, and that wasn't on the list, which shocked me. So what I did was I knew this was accessing the National Weather Service, so I went to that site, looked at how their system worked, did some searches for my area, and found the raw data and found the codes that the National Weather Service used. I then, in turn, went into the weather module. I had to modify the database. I had to modify some code to make it happen. But you have to understand databases. You have to learn databases and take advantage of databases. And I inserted the area that I wanted on there, tweaked it in the database to have certain qualities that I wanted, certain values in certain fields, and changed it, and then changed the code accordingly so that I now added my area to the database. Such a small little thing, but damn it, I wanted it on there, and that's what hackers do. We want something, we do it. We find a way to do it. And I gotta admit, I actually, the more that I use PHP, the more I'm starting to like it. I'm becoming more comfortable with it, more familiar with it. You know, people ask me about it, what is it, what's it like? Correct me if this may be way off. So correct me if you disagree with this, but I'm going to go on this out on a limb here. I think of PHP as SQL for the web. That's the way I think of it. SQL is not dead. SQL is still a powerful tool. Every database in the world uses SQL in some way, shape, or form. And PHP is a way of, it's not embedded SQL, but it's a similar language that you can access databases, but through the web with a web interface. It also has a lot more functionality than most SQL.
Yeah, when I think of PHP, I think more of like a cross between C and Perl. With all the database extensions and stuff like that, PHP has dozens and dozens and dozens of modules that you can add on. You can generate PDFs and images on the fly and everything. So I think of it more than SQL.
Yeah, SQL, a combination of SQL and C, I would say. Or yeah, because it is modular. You can write and add on routines very easily. So anyway, I'm happy with it. I'm getting more comfortable with it, and apparently so are a lot of other people. Really, the growth of PHP in the last, even the last 6 months, but the last year, you know, it's like every day I hear more and more about it. And now it's not only MySQL, it's also that PostGRE. And I haven't had time to kind of analyze and see the differences and some of the advantages of one over the other. The PostGRE, from what I can see at first glance, is on a much larger scale. It's for bigger databases and more powerful features. But if anybody knows the difference there and wants to correct me or wants to elaborate, feel free.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of experience with Postgres. I don't know if people have seen my little mapping database that I've been playing around with, but I initially tried to do it on MySQL, and MySQL just died on it. And I put it into Postgres, and it works pretty decent. I use Postgres and PHP and some Perl scripts to tie it all together. And that database is like 36 6 gigabytes, and it still hums along pretty nicely on my 1.4 gigahertz machine.
Right, and that's what I had read, was that it was mostly a file size issue.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it handles really huge databases better than MySQL, from my experience.
Well, and that's a good segue into, I mean, that's pretty much what I've been doing, is all this web administration and stuff like that. And yes, I'm doing some database work, but you are doing a very big database project.
Yeah, you could say that. And the people at DSLReports.com could probably say that, too.
Yeah, they're not too happy with you right now.
Yeah, they don't really like me too much. What happened was, I think it was Coder365 asked about locations of central offices and where you could find that information. And I was thinking about it. And then I realized, okay, DSL Reports has all the information. That's pretty cool. So I could go there and look up, okay, you know, my central office is on, like, 1 Main Street, whatever. That's great. But then I thought about it, and I thought back to the NPA database, NPA NXX database that I had built for my phone application. And I thought, you know, maybe it'd be cool to put the address of all the central offices in there. So I wrote a couple of commands that used wget and would go to DSL Reports and download all of their information pages about all of the switches that I had, so I could get the, you know, all the features that they had, the address, and the zip code from the GPS coordinates that they list.
Right.
Okay.
There's probably quite a few of those, right?
Yeah, there's, as a matter of fact, as you were talking before, I hit 17,000. But I'm not quite sure how far it's going to go. Right. Yeah, right now it's about 17,200.
All right, so that should only take a few minutes to get, right?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
No problem.
But you were doing it like I was first doing it. I was doing it with no delay in between requests. And then I realized, you know something, that's probably really, really stupid, because eventually they're going to notice. So I put a 2-second delay between each one. And then I noticed about 2 hours later, I went back and checked on it, and it started saying 503 service unavailable. So I went back to the web page with my web browser and saw, okay, it's still up and running. So you know, maybe my script is just broken, or maybe it's just requesting web pages that don't really exist. So I went in, and just to double check, I changed the user agent string, which is a string that identifies your web browser to the web server. I changed that from the normal wget one to Bob Dole, and sure enough, the first request went through no problem. So apparently they don't let you grab any pages off of DSL Reports. .com. Maybe it's only for my IP and whatever, but anything I try to get with wget without changing the user agent string now doesn't work. So apparently somebody noticed something. So now I've changed the delay to 5 seconds, and I've changed my user agent string, and it's been humming along. You know, I've downloaded, like I said, 17,000 plus COs, and it's been going pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, this somewhat, we're not going to rehash last show, but on the last episode, we talked about the possibility of copywriting databases of public information. And a list of COs and stuff like that, a list of that, technically that is public information. There's nothing secret or private or anything about that. DSL Reports, yeah, they put in the work to have it all in one central place, and you are using that. But there's not really an issue of copyright or anything like that, because it is publicly available information. So that's not really an issue. I think just the fact that you were doing it every second or every 2 seconds there for a while.
Yeah, I think it's kind of abuse of their resources.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, fair enough. It's their machines. They can pretty much say what I can do with it.
And I would wager they've seen Bob Dole visiting.
Yeah, I would say that.
And they probably, since you've also changed the delay to a little bit longer, maybe they're okay with it now.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a message to say, hey, you're killing our system, man.
Right.
So
honestly, you know, I'm willing to hit this system a little bit slower and, you know, give them a bit of a break, but I want this information, and the only way that I can get it is to pay somebody hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
For public information that should be free and available to the public. It's public information.
Exactly. And the reason why nobody will provide it is because Verizon or, you know, whatever company will say, oh, it's too expensive for us to put it online for everybody because people will download it and abuse it and whatever, you know. Maybe that'll happen with some people, like idiots like me. Yeah, I'll download it and abuse it, because I'm just a dirtbag. But I think that they've already got the information. They can put it up in whatever format they have. They don't have to cater to anybody and, you know, put it in format X or format, you know, Microsoft SQL Server format. They don't have to do anything for anybody. Just give us the data, and we'll put it in our own format ourselves, you know? So it's pretty much no effort for them, but they don't want to do it. They want to sell it to somebody else so somebody else can sell it to you. I think that sucks. So.
Well, and, you know, there's actually a line in our opening theme song that says, and to paraphrase, listen, we're going to take it. We're going to take it nicely, or are we going to take it by force?
Yep.
You know, we're going to get it. If there's information out there that's public and should be public and free, oh, we're damn well going to get it.
Yep, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to give it to everybody.
Exactly. That's what we do. Information longs to be free. But, you know, and you know, you're not the dirtbag. Actually, the dirtbag of this episode, and I don't know about a fucknut. Should I give him the Fucknut of the Month award? Is the person who is now in possession of a piece of equipment that you hold dearly.
I'm going to go insane.
All right, this is why there was a disclaimer at the beginning of the show.
All right, my week has sucked. I've been working like crazy, killing myself, and that was bad enough. Then driving to work, I crash into a deer that just jumped out in the middle of traffic. So my car's all fucked up, and now I have to spend tons of money to fix it. And to top all that off, I misplaced my cell phone somewhere. So what does somebody do? Somebody picks it up and starts calling one of my friends and leaving them harassing messages and all types of stuff. I am pissed off at this bastard, and if I find him, I just want to kill him. So, what am I going to do? I have no idea. I can't get through to Sprint. Sprint apparently is closed, although you would think a cell phone company would have 24-hour customer support. Honestly, I thought Sprint was a great company because they always hooked me up with everything. Now, I want to kill them. And the only thing that I can think to do is to just message bomb my own phone so he can't use it. You know, send it emails over and over and over again so every second he's getting another email that stops him from dialing somewhere else. Or if he's on the phone, you know, we'll interrupt him. But I have a feeling that this person is using my phone, calling all over the place, and I don't think anybody's going to help me out to find this person.
Not until business hours tomorrow.
Yeah, not until business hours tomorrow, and that's the thing. It's not like this person is just being a nice guy and whatever, you know, taking my phone and giving me a call to give it back. He's calling up people. He's harassing them. He's gone through my voicemail and erased all my voicemail messages.
That's so not
which
cool.
Which were fairly important. So I think something should be able to be done to this person. My phone has a GPS unit in it. Sprint can find this person in 2 seconds, but I guarantee you that they will not do anything. Not even if I call the police, they won't do anything about it.
Not unless they have a court order.
Yep.
I'm sure you're
probably we'll turn
right.
off your phone and you can buy a new one and that's it. So that's fucked up my week, and I'm just so angry. And then these people, every time the Yankees win a game, they come around honking their horn, just adding fuel to the fire. Damn it!
You're trying to calm and mellow out and relax and go to sleep, and
I'm just chilling out, and then all of a sudden the fucking Yankees have to win. What?
Woohoo, Yankees!
And they're, oh, God. All right, I'm going to go insane. I'm just going to start cursing like crazy for about 15 minutes straight. But what else can I say? I did actually learn one thing from this experience.
And what is that? Share it with the audience.
Okay, this is an interesting piece of information. If you have a Sprint phone, you can opt to either, you know, have your voicemail so when you call it up, you enter in your password every time. Or if you call directly from your Sprint phone, it will not prompt you for the password. It'll look at your ANI. You know, it's Sprint's network. They can tell if you're calling from your phone by a lot of, you know, by the electronic serial number and your phone number and everything. They can tell by that which phone is calling. So if you turn this feature on, you call up, and you get right into your voicemail with no password. Now, me, like an idiot, you know, you'd think I'd be more concerned about security, so I would turn this feature off. But, no, I'm lazy, like everybody else, I'll admit it.
Yeah. Hey, no, I'm with you. I got the same thing.
Yeah, so, you know, I have this feature on, and this is how the person was able to get into my voicemail and delete the saved messages I had. So, whatever. Then I found out, if you go into you go into your personal options, and then you go into administrative options, and you turn this feature off, Sprint will say, you know, the voice will come back and say, you have disabled the auto password feature of your voicemail. Now, every time you want to access your voicemail, you have to enter your passcode of, and then it reads off your passcode. So if you get anybody's phone, you can get their passcode by turning this feature off, and then just turn it back on, and you have access to their voicemail because they're not going to know that you can find out their voicemail passcode.
But see, what is the point? What is the logic of reading the passcode to you? The whole point is to not, I don't get their logic. What's their goal there?
No password system should ever give up your password. It shouldn't even have access, you know.
That's the point of a password system.
Exactly. It should be some, like, you know, hashing scheme or something like that, so they don't have the real password on file. Like Unix does it, you know. They hash your password, and you enter it, and it puts your password through a hash file and a hash function, and if it matches, then you get in. But it's just, obviously, it's stored somewhere in their database in plain text, that anybody can get to it. I think that is the dumbest thing ever. But whatever, they're not going to change it because of me. So I'm just going to have to go. You know, I already changed my voicemail password and everything, and I've started the process of message bombing my own phone until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning when I can call them up and fix it.
I still think you should do what I suggested and leave yourself a voicemail, telling the person that you're going to kick his ass when you find him with the phone.
Yeah, very.
Actually, be more. Try to social engineer your way and trick him. Say, this is, you know, Inspector Clouseau or something from law enforcement. We are triangulating. Odds are it's probably some schmuck that doesn't know what you're talking about. Just throw some long words at him and, you know, tell him that his BLT unit is FUBAR or whatever the code from, tell whatever the thing line from Hackers, and tell him that if he returns the phone to such and such a location that you will drop charges or make up something that maybe you can scare him into dropping the phone off somewhere.
Yeah, and then when he comes around to do it, I'm just going to run him over with my rental car. Damn it. I want to kill this bastard.
Yankees baseball bat.
Oh, yeah, that'll work. What else was I going to say? I had something else to say in reference to this. Oh, Sprint actually has a very good feature that I haven't gotten to play with yet. But you can send a message to somebody's phone, and it's supposed to give you a tracking number, so you can tell if the message was delivered. So now I have a way to find out if the phone is actually still on or if the battery has run out, so... So that's kind of nice. So if I'm message bombing the phone, you know, I can detect to see if it's on or not, so I know whether to bother. So.
And you know, the thing is, people have come on the forums, I think, in the past, and in general, come to Hackers as though we have some magical solution to a problem like this.
Right.
Well, no, our phones get stolen too. A thief is still a thief, and there's not much you can do about good old-fashioned stealing someone's phone. Now, if we had authority or access to the phone company, whether we got it nice or we take it or whatever, we're trying to play and, you know, call the customer service and explain to them, and that's authority and power that we don't have any better than you do, and it's not worth breaking into a system and stuff like that and risk getting in worse trouble just to get your own phone back because they won't cooperate. There is no magic answer to this just because we're in the hacking community. It's just as much a problem for us. So guard your phone with your life.
Oh, yeah. I just started actually sending messages to it. I sent a message that says enabling GPS. Maybe that'll shake things up. So
make them nervous or something.
I don't know.
And you know, the other thing that's disappointing is that you don't have access to go online and do some things with it, because I can go on and deactivate my phone, turn it off, cancel, you know, contact whoever online and see every minute. I can see what phone calls the person's making. Because, you know, not only is he calling your friends and harassing them,
yep,
and possibly calling 900 Hot Tiger or whatever.
And now I get to call up these people and say, you know, I didn't call 1-800 Hotmail or whatever.
Exactly. So, hey, I wonder if we've ever done that on an 800 scan. Hotmail. You think that actually belongs to Hotmail.com?
I don't know. That'd be interesting.
I know your joke was M-A-L-E, but
what if
there's Hotmail. 1-800 Hotmail. That would be funny. We'll have to try that on. We'll have to try that on RFA. Bland, put that on your list. Check that one out.
But yeah, you're right. I should. Like you said, some other phone companies let you enable, disable your phone, check your up-to-the-minute usage, but apparently, you know, Sprint's online service used to be great compared to everybody else, but now it's really fallen behind. I can't check what calls I've made until I get the invoice. At least I can't find a way to do it online. So.
No, not easily, yeah. By the time we spent all the work and effort to do something online and to hack into some place, you might as well just call in during business hours Monday and make your case. But see, with mine, I can go online, I can see every call that was made up to like 10 minutes ago, or 5 minutes ago even. It's pretty up to date. So this person's probably making, like I said, not only is he calling 1-900 this and that, I'm sure he used it to call his friends, or his other, you know, someone he knows, or himself, or his job. If you could see those numbers, maybe you could track him back down by figuring out who he's calling.
Oh, yeah, you can bet. As soon as I get that bill, if I see any number I don't recognize, that's it. I'm calling the people and trying to find out what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's maybe too little too late at that point.
Could be.
Depending
but you know
on. Depending
if you play
on,
this game with me, I'm going to play it right back with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what else are you going to do? Let's jump ahead a little bit. I had an interesting article I read, if you're following me here. I have an interesting article that I read, Popular Science, new issue I got about a week or so ago. Interesting not in content, but interesting in that we've been over this issue many times on the show, like years ago. And not only us, but anybody in the Linux community knows this. This is an article about using old hardware and salvaging old hardware and old systems. Now, yes, there is a subculture, there is a group of people that get into, like, that's their hobby, is playing with the old computers, but mostly like the old TRS-80 or old Commodore 64 and stuff like that. Well, yeah, that I admit that's one thing, but another culture, and they try to make it as though this was some obscure, rare thing that not a lot of people were into. Well, no, we've been saying for years that Linux will run on thin hardware, on old, low-end machines, and it's not because we're hobbyists and we're trying to come up and play with these old, obscure stuff. It's because we're a bunch of broke asses.
Yeah, we can't afford the 3 gigahertz machines the day they come out. So.
Exactly. So we're still, you know, I still have AMD, what is it, an AMD K6 processor. I got some Pentium 2s. I got a 486 in parts laying over there that I could put back together. And I could throw a Linux distro on there, and it could be a fully functional computer. It'll actually completely do just about anything I want to do. This is something that we've been touting on the air for the longest time. A dual parallel is rolling over in his grave.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't mention that I killed him and RFA will be ending soon. I guess I should have started the show with that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's old. Now, actually, Duhl is very, very animated about that. He very much preaches about this, and, you know, it's nothing new. I guess, actually, the fact that it's in Popular Science? It's in Popular... Let me see. Well, I threw it away. Was it Popular Mechanics or Popular Science? I think it was Popular Science. Make it sound like this is some new phenomenon when it's actually not. Most people in the Linux community know that, and that's one of the big things touted about Linux is that it runs on older hardware, stuff that's most people consider obsolete. And it's also another reason, I'm going to go out a limb a little bit, it's another reason why a lot of hackers dumpster dive. Yeah, we like to find the information and old manuals and stuff like that that we can use, but hell, people are throwing away 486s and Pentium 1s and even Pentium 2s sometimes. You will find them out behind buildings. You will find pallets of them sometimes.
Yep.
If you're really lucky, that is. You know, but you'll find old computers tossed out that, with only the tiniest bit of work, and sometimes no work at all, just installing the proper OS on it, you can have working and fully functional, and hell, if you don't do anything but put it on the distributed.NET client and turn it loose on the DDP distributed team. You know, there's plenty of great things that you can do with this old hardware, and there's nothing wrong with it. So, anyway... I had to mention on the air because, you know, we've talked about it so much, it's really nothing new.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and speaking of Commodore 64s, I didn't mention this before the show, but I had the privilege of checking out a radio station the other day, like a real, not an internet radio station, you know, no offense to Rant Radio, but I mean, this is a real radio station with a huge tower and everything, and it's actually being run, for the most part, by a Commodore 64. It's, the station is just that old, they've never upgraded.
Wow, you have got to be kidding me.
I swear on my life, I walked in to check this thing out, and the guy said, yeah, we need to upgrade our computers. I saw a Commodore 64 on the desk, and jokingly, I was like, wow, yeah, you're running this thing, you've got to upgrade. And he said, yeah, it's been running the station for 10 years now. So,
you've got. I'm sorry, but I have to see that to believe it. I don't believe.
You know what? I'll take a picture and.
That is insane. That is insane.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
If you told me it was running on an old 486 or even a 386, I'd believe you. But
I couldn't even believe it when I saw it.
Oh my god!
It had one of those old junky monitors and the two floppy drives behind it, and it had, you know, it had the radio station running off of
wow.
it.
See, I remember having my old VIC-20. And having to load programs from a cassette tape. I'd have cassette tapes that had half of the cassette was music and the other half was programs.
Wow. 620, now that's some old hardware.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, the funny thing is I had that up until, gosh, 5 or 6 years ago. I finally moved, and I've moved a lot in my life, as listeners know. I've moved around quite a few places on the run, so to speak, and I carried it with me all this time because I loved it. It was just so cool, and the nostalgia effect, and it worked. As far as I know, I hadn't turned it on for years, but it worked at last knowledge. And I just got tired of dragging it around and carrying it and packing it up. So this last time that I moved, which was about 5 or 6 years ago, when I was packing stuff up, I'm like, you know what? This will be one less trip to the U-Haul.
Yep.
So I just chucked it. Actually, I gave it away to a friend. I gave away my Atari 2600 and a whole box full of games, which now I really feel stupid about that. God, I wish I had that. I still love to play combat. I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, combat is definitely the
dude,
game.
Dude, those two little block tanks, boop, 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 boop. That was the most kick-ass game.
Yep, still in the day, man. I would play it.
Yep, and the planes.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Oh, man, what a great game. And there was like 100-and-something games on combat. The cartridge by itself, there was 100 different variations and stuff of the game itself.
Oh, yeah, the big planes, the triple planes in a row and all that stuff.
Oh, that kicked ass. Man, now, you know what? I'm going to head down to the Haitian Swap Shop this weekend and buy a new 2600, and I'll probably have to pay out the wazoo for it because they probably think it's the latest technology and they want $150 for it. Oh, well, you know what? I think that's the show, man.
That's it? Wow.
I think that's it. I think that's going to do it. I would like to actually find out about these Linux distros I mentioned earlier, or any others if there's some I left out. So if anybody's got any information or any other suggestions on those, you know how to contact us. It's letters@benrev.com. And we are eventually, damn it, going to talk about 64-bit processing, which I'd like to do, get you on the phone and talk about that sometime soon. And I got a couple other things here I want to bring up, but nothing urgent. So I think this is a good closing time. I unfortunately, like I mentioned at the top of the show, as far as I'm concerned, the World Series is over. My Cubs are out.
Mm-hmm.
I am in mourning. So my shout-outs tonight are not going to be the first. Maybe, you know what? As a matter of fact, they are. I lied. I am going to shout out the Chicago Cubs because they had a damn good season. This is the last one, I promise. These guys. I should shout out that guy who reached over and caught the ball, but
he's
been tortured enough, I guess. I think his name was Bartman or something like that.
I don't remember.
The guy, you know, he's sitting in the stands and a baseball comes flying to him. So he did what anybody in their normal right mind would do. He caught the baseball. But, oh gosh. It turned into a big controversy because they claimed the guy could have caught it over the fence, and maybe he could have, but oh my God, the guy got death threats. The guy had to have his phone disconnected the next day from so many people calling, and people were calling his job and his place of business, harassing this guy. Come on, I love the Cubs as much as anybody, and I love the game of baseball. I hate the business of baseball. I love the game of baseball. I'm not going to call and threaten and harass some guy because he caught a baseball.
Yeah, that's too much, man.
Please.
People are insane when it comes to sports.
I'm sure none of our listeners are doing that, but if anybody listening is calling, and come on, get a fucking life. Seriously. So I'm shouting out my Chicago Cubs. I'm going to shout out Bartman, whatever the hell his name is. And actually, there was a funny, on SportsCenter, they supposedly had him live on the air. And if I can find the audio of that, I might close the show. I might play that here at the end of the show. Somebody called in live on SportsCenter claiming that it was him, and they're interviewing the guy live, and then it turns out at the very end it was a prank call. So they were just so red-faced, it was hilarious.
Awesome.
So I might search that and throw that at the end of the show just before our closing music, which tonight is Sacrilegious from Insidious Productions, and it's a track called Talk to Me. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. Do you have any shouts you want to throw?
Just shouts to the kid who stole my phone. I'm going to come after you.
No, I said shouts, not punches.
Yeah, well.
They may come.
Let me think. Shouts to Coder365 because he motivated me to rip off DSL reports. So.
Yeah, and you know what? Shout out to DSL Reports. You know, they haven't shut you down the second time.
Yeah, if they shut me down again, I'll just get around it somehow. Yeah. I'll move to another IP, whatever. Yeah. I'll figure it out.
For right now, they get shouts. Next week, they may be able to get... we can tell them to suck a fat dick. But for now, we're going to give them shout outs.
Fair enough.
And that will do it for me. So, we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Peace out.
Many Chicagoans point to this incident in the left field stands in the eighth inning of Game 6 Tuesday night as another in a long line of incidents that perpetuate the curse on the Cubs. At the time, left fielder Moises Alou was chasing the foul ball when a number of Cub fans, including 26-year-old Steve Bartman, reached for the ball and kept Alou from having a shot at catching it. Steve Bartman, a lifelong Cub fan, is joining us now via the phone on SportsCenter. Steve, take me back to Tuesday night. The ball is coming off the bat of Luis Castillo, and what's going through your mind?
I was with a couple friends, and you know, we had a couple beers in us, and we were just sitting there and caught up in the moment, and I didn't even think twice. I just reached out and grabbed the ball, as anyone would have been, I think, in that position.
When the ball was coming at you, did you realize that Moises Alou had a chance to catch it?
To tell you the truth, I really couldn't see him. He was like directly under me, and I just didn't see him. And combined with the excitement of the minute, may I say that I'm truly, truly sorry for causing the heartache to the city of Chicago, the Cubs management, team players, and of course, you know, the fans.
When security came to talk to you,
right,
were you being informed that you had done something wrong, or they were there for your protection?
Well, I was told that they were there for my protection. People were throwing things at me, bottles, glass, plastic, and you know, and you know, it was very scary because I could have got hurt, you know, hit with something and seriously injured.
Have you received death threats, Steve?
Yes, I have received at least 5 death threats. Calling my parents' house, and you know, people get, you know, especially from the news, they've been calling, and I'm pretty much right now hiding out right now.
Can you stay in the Chicago area?
Do you like Howard Stern's butt cheese?
We've been had. That was not Steve Bartman.